Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Mud Toe at Midnight. I am your host, Mud Toe Sasquatch. I have played my flute and I have offered sacred fire in the four directions. Please join me in sacred ceremony. I speak as spirit moves me to speak, and I invite you to do the same by calling me at 646-595-3440. And now, Mud Toe at Midnight.
Yeah. Good evening, brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors. Welcome to Mud Toe at Midnight. I am your host, Mud Toe Sasquatch. Thank you for joining me this evening here on the withinsightsradio.com channel of blogtalkradio.com. Now, withinsightsradio.com is just chock full of wonderful spiritual internet radio programs, and this one. If you're interested in the more, I won't say traditional spiritual, because they're not really traditional spiritual. I'm going to get into a deep description. If you want to know more about them, you can look at the withinsightsradio.com section of the blogtalkradio.com website and learn more. But you do have Iggy Garcia and friends on Monday at 6 p.m. and then the lunchtime show the next day at Tuesdays at 11:30. You've got Mark the Rabbit Hole. The newest show is on Fridays at 11 a.m. And Mark, one of the newer people to join our circle. And he's quite a character. Does a nice little show. Sure you'll enjoy it if you tune in. And I don't know, I missed at least one. I just don't remember the ones that are in the middle of the week. I'm bringing up the tail here. Bringing up the rear. I'm the caboose of the withinsightsradio.com week. Mud Toe at Midnight here at midnights on Friday or Saturday, depending on how you look at it. I think it's most people. I think officially, according to Hoyle, it's Saturday morning, Saturday a.m. But I remember a film I once saw, a probably direct-to-video film about vampires. Actually, it won some sort of award for vampire movies, the Vampire, the Sucker Award, or something. But Scott Valentine, whom you may remember from Family Ties, was Mallory's boyfriend. Played a vampire, and he had this line. He said, the night belongs to the day that it follows. And I've always lived by that sort of injunction. So I think it's Friday. And since it's my show, I get what I want. Okay, now I'm going to pause here just a second because I have something up on Facebook, and it may be someone trying to communicate with me. So we ask, you know, the spirit's trying to communicate us through Facebook. Nope, it's something else. I'm sorry. All righty. I'm sorry for that little interruption, but I don't multitask well. So I see something happening on the computer, and I got to check it out. And it just brings the whole show to a screeching halt. I'm sorry about that. But anyway, remembering that I did promise to finish a story I started last Friday and ran out of time, and I am going to do that. But first, there's something I want to take care of first. My note here is, I don't like Stacey London, and that's true. It's very true. I don't like Stacey London. Now, Stacey London, for those of you who mercifully have forgotten, I was the co-host of a television show called What Not to Wear. And the premise of the show was that some people would submit one of their friends for humiliation. The friend didn't have what they considered to be the proper taste in clothing. So Stacey London and this other guy, I don't remember him so much as I remember Stacey. They would come down and pick this person up and eliminate their old wardrobe and give them a new wardrobe and tear them apart in the process. And that's really what I didn't like about it. It was one of the first times, I won't say realized, I think there was always the clue in my head that reality television was never exactly on a level, even watching Cops back in the 80s. You know, it's not 100%, you know, legit. And then we went through the Real World, Road Rules era. When I was, that's pretty much, for a while, that's pretty much what reality television was. You had Cops, and you had, I guess you could throw the show that was after Cops, the guy with the dude whose kid had been stolen, Walsh. And they would, what was that called? America's Most Wanted was the name of that show. So I guess you kind of can throw that into reality, but maybe not so much. Well, anyway, you had Cops anyway. And then you had the MTV sort of generation, the Road Rules, and the Real World, as they said. And, you know, you're kind of slipping in and out of reality with a lot of those things. You can't, you know, okay, maybe the things were actually happened or were actually filmed, but these situations were set up or at least encouraged. You select the people you select to put in the house and lock up together. You know bad things are going to happen. That's why you pick them. So, again, reality isn't reality. And then there's always, of course, that question of what would happen if the cameras weren't there. But this, What Not to Wear, I think was the first in a generation of these humiliation-based reality shows. And also, you know, I know anyway, that they can't really be, the situation is not what it was as being represented. Because it costs a lot of money to make a television show. And I don't accept the idea that they would send, a television network would send cameras and crew and talent to a place and they're going to pick somebody up and not know if they're going to cooperate or not. Because if that person, the person who's been targeted for humiliation, says, no, I'm not going to do it, shows off because they have to sign a contract, they have to sign away their image, they're going to probably be paid something. How much are they going to be paid? All that. That stuff all has to be settled. And they're not going to take the chance that the person's going to say, no way. And then they're out and they got to figure out what a different episode to do that week. All that stuff has to be figured. All that stuff has to be settled before they even come down there. So the show's not on the level to begin with. From step one, you're being lied to, essentially. Now, okay, it's entertainment, and it's, you know, it's not such a big deal. I mean, we're lied to by our politicians all the time, and that's something that's quite a bit more serious than having media lie to you, unless it's news media. But our entertainment spectrum is so dominated by these shows now. I think we have to take, you know, a good healthy dose of, you know, reality. There were people who thought The Hills was real. There are people who still think The Hills was real. The Hills was not real. It was a reality show, 100, you know, it was a scripted reality show, 100%. It was probably less real than most of the reality shows we have now. But, you know, you got your Kardashians, and I knock the Kardashians all the time, but they're really not even close to being the worst offenders. But of doing this thing that's, you know what I mean when I say offenders? What is their offense, I wonder? I mean, they're lying, but it's television. Television is a lie. It's just a matter of degree. How honest are you about your lie? Okay, example. Kendra on Top. If you've seen Kendra on Top, Kendra was one of the girls who used to live with Hugh Hefner in his mansion. And she's a high school girl, and she was, I think, stripping. I won't say stripping. I don't know the details that well, but she was doing some stuff. And she got, she caught the attention of Hugh Hefner, and she's in the mansion, and she gets this, she's on the TV show, and now she has her own TV show. So not a lot of chance for development of adult attitudes. No experience. She doesn't have any experience doing anything, really. So she lives in this big house with her husband, and her husband cheated on her, and that's what the entire series has been about this year. It's tracking of 13 episodes of her husband cheated on her, and is she going to kick him out? Is she not going to kick him out? That sort of thing. And then the final resolution of the series was that they're going to go, she and her husband are going to go on a different reality show. They're going to jump reality shows to one that's called Marriage Boot Camp. And now this is a real, I mean, there's a real dose of non-reality reality for you, is there's a marriage counselor who's working with these various celebrity couples trying to save their marriages. And one has to wonder right off the top about the ethics of a marriage counselor who would work on television, because there are just many situations where I'd see if I was the one being counseled, I would wonder about situations where there's maybe one course of action that would be good for me and a different course of action that would be good for the show. And if the counselor works for the show, or maybe even owns the show, which course of action is that counselor going to take? Is that counselor going to be true to his or her, you know, ethic of caring for me, or are they going to do what's good for their business? I would always be wondering that. But that situation makes me wonder if the whole situation between Kendra and her husband is even on the level. If this whole thing is something that's been staged so that they could get on this marriage counseling show. You have to wonder. You have to wonder about everything. I think it's reached the point where there's just absolutely nothing on these shows that can be taken at face value. And the question becomes, why is that important? And I'm not real sure. I was hoping I would think of why it was so important while I was talking, and it didn't happen. It's just something I've advised, I've noticed, I've observed. Since I've been watching much more reality television than I'm really used to. One reason one hopes for a return of income so I can get my own place and I don't have to watch other people's television anymore. But anyway, that's where I'm at now, and these are things I've observed that there isn't so much reality left in reality television, except, of course, the money. Money is always real. That, and I don't like Stacey London. So we'll just wind up this topic with that cogent observation. Is cogent a word? Is that the word I'm looking for? No, it seems to me I heard it. What was that noise? That was terrifying. My poor father, I'm sitting here, I'm in my folks' house. I have two aged parents, and I'm here. Well, I've got part-time work. I don't have full-time work until I get full-time work again. I've been spending a lot of time with my parents. I've also been crashing in various basements of various friends. But I'm here at my parents' tonight, and my father makes some of the most horrific noises when he's sleeping that you can possibly imagine. And they're filtered. His room's next to mine, and they come sort of filtered through the wall. So they're not, you know, they're not loud. They're sort of softer. It's almost like some sort of, it's like, oh, what's that game where the things you're fighting, the creatures that are after you, the green kind of blobby creatures, Resident Evil. It's kind of like something from Resident Evil. You hear the sound come through the wall. It's like, it's my father doing his 77-year-old sleeping thing. And then he'll let out a good cough a couple times and scare me to death. Because, you want him to be okay. I shouldn't even think of that. Someone put negative thoughts like this out into the universe. That's, you see him in the morning and you're like, oh, good. Because, he was in his 70s. But anyway, love to Dad, love to Mom, they take good care of me. I had a fight with Mom on Thursday, not a fight, we had a little disagreement. I was trying to get out of the house on Thursday morning and had an appointment out of town, and she made me some breakfast, and I was sort of eating it rather quickly. And Mom, she doesn't have very many people to talk to. And so she wants to, she's been up since 5:30. She's been cranked up for about 3 hours. She wants to talk to somebody. And I, you know, I've just got out of bed, and I'm, you know, she'd probably be about 10 o'clock before I start to function at anything like a normal level. So she's chattering at me about something she saw on Fox News. And she winds up with, it was something like, and, you know, it says, Obama is supposed to, you know, he's supposed to be working for all of us. And I said, so are the Republicans. And she got all upset with me. And that's by far, I mean, it's not even close to being the worst thing I've ever said in a political sort of, I very much try to avoid political debates, especially with my mother. But I mean, success, not even, that's nothing. I've said far, far worse things than that. Sometimes you just don't know. And she's probably just looking for a nice conversation in the morning. I should have just nodded my head and agreed with her. But we made up. And she made me a nice roast beef sandwich that I was going to take with me, so I'd have for dinner, because I was going to have a sushi lunch when I got to Columbus. That city that I shouldn't mention the name of, because I'm trying to stealth this whole thing and not tell anybody where I'm from. That's kind of been blown up several times in the show already, but... So that's, I haven't, that's, well, I started off just talking about, I heard the noise that my father made. Okay, now I remember where I'm at. Okay, now before we let too much more time slip by, I got to pick up on that thread I had left last week. And this is so close to being a mud toe whining thread that I was almost going to drop it. But no, I said I would finish it, and I will finish what I started. Generally, it was about... me thinking about regretting that I didn't have more children than I did. I have one, again, to recap, I have one grown daughter, and I have a granddaughter. And for most of my existence, that seemed fine with me. Had a couple of pregnancy scares when I was single, and they ended up being, you know, nothing. Somebody jumping the gun, and then a couple of days later, oh, never mind, you know. There was a brief period of time that my second wife and I were trying to get pregnant, but that went by the wayside. And I never, you know, I never had any sort of pangs of regret until very recently. And with a lady I was seeing who didn't seem terribly interested in using birth control. And it was, I was becoming interested in, you know, what was going to happen. I mean, first of all, you know, if she becomes pregnant, what am I going to do? But there was a sort of anticipation there. There was very much an idea. I would kind of like that idea of being a father again, because it's getting to the point where I really shouldn't. You know, I'm going to be 50 years old in February. And I'm really, if I ever were to be a father again, I'm running out of time, because, you know, at 50, a baby that I would have, I wouldn't have. I'm not going to have the baby. I'm going to have someone else have it for me. But at 50, any baby that I would sire would be, when that baby got out of high school, I'd be 68. When he or she got out of college, I'd be 72. And not in a good position to be really helpful to them if they were to need help. And I've already done that to myself once, you know, by wrecking my finances. I'm in a position where, you know, I can't be helpful to my own, you know, my grown daughter. You know, there are lots of things I would like to be able to do for her and, you know, for my granddaughter who's special needs. But I'm just simply not in a position to do it. So, just say, if I were to wait longer, I'm probably getting to a position where I just can't. It just wouldn't be fair. It just wouldn't be fair to the child, to stick them with a father who's so old. But anyway, I said, okay, that's all set up. I got to get to the story. It was just because there was this younger woman that I'd been seeing very recently that had sort of spurred those feelings. There was another woman who I saw many, many, many years ago who had the very same sort of attitude, sort of blasé, blasé attitude towards birth control. And she was the first woman that I dated after my first divorce. And my first, okay, stop saying and all the time. It's very tiresome. My first wife and I, to speak for myself, she was the first partner I ever had. I'm pretty sure that I was the first partner she ever had. But in any case, neither of us really knew very much about what we were doing. And over 2 years of being married, we didn't really improve that much. And I mean, it's because we didn't have resources. We didn't have anyone to go to. We didn't have, there was no place for us to go to learn how to make love. Okay. I mean, porno, forget it. Don't. Porno doesn't work because those people are professionals. It's like athletes. You can't, there's nothing in that an ordinary person can copy or even emulate. Okay, so don't even worry about that. And I'm sure at that time, I mean, there were probably resources. I'm sure there are resources that exist now. You can probably find it on YouTube. But, when we were young, we didn't have that kind of stuff. So we just kind of stumbled along doing what we could do. And then after we divorced, I met this woman who knew a lot more about what was up here. And, committed a lot of stuff to memory and have sort of built on it. It's one of those things. As each woman has come in and out of my life, my sort of repertoire has improved, I like to think. And I sort of combine. I take what I knew before and I combine the new stuff and create something that's hopefully better. But this was the sort of very baseline learning. I mean, I was learning stuff. Really, this is how you do that. Okay, this is how you make that work. And from the very sort of beginnings of how physically you make things happen, and then to some a bit more advanced, 200, 300 level. We start with the 101, and then we moved on to some of the other stuff. But again, what I'd said was standing out in my mind right now is the fact that birth control, whatever. That was her attitude. And it was scary to me at that age. I was 24. But there was a certain exhilaration in it, too, of the possibility of being a father again. It's like the two times in my life that I remember having that exhilaration are with her and then recently with the woman I was with from about this time last year we were together for about 6 months. And I wonder if maybe I'm just plugging into that younger version of myself. Is it really that I'm sitting here at almost 50 years old thinking, man, I didn't have any more children. I should, try while I still have a couple of years left. Or is it just the ghost of some feelings coming from a time when I was very young, a time when I knew very little about what I really wanted, a time that I liked the attention that came from becoming a father. I wasn't ready for it. But I did enjoy the attention that I got because of having the baby around. That's actually the reason my first marriage broke up was my wife was very strict about when the baby got taken out of the house and who she saw and what's not. And that wasn't enough for me, so I started sneaking her out of the house when my wife was at work. Of course, she was working and I wasn't. So I'd sneak her out of the house principally to my parents' house, which is the same house I'm sitting in right now, by the way. and to other places, mostly to my parents' house. And I got caught once. And I brought the baby home. And my wife told me that I could leave. So I did, and I didn't go back. I think the point was she was going to tell me I was leaving. She expected I was going, oh, no, no, please don't, please don't. I don't think she expected that I was going to had actually been looking for an excuse to get out of the marriage in some way, because it was really destroying me inside, the idea that I had committed to this woman for the rest of my life, and now I had a child with her, and I could look and see nothing but sort of blackness going ahead. And so, I mean, the divorce was the best thing that could have happened. I'm sorry that I missed a lot of my daughter growing up. I didn't miss everything, but I missed a lot. But I think it was the best thing for everyone involved in the end. And, you know, I still see my daughter. I love my daughter. Have a beautiful granddaughter. All that part worked out fine. But then there is still this thought about, you know, what about one more go at it? But I need to understand, because, you know, it's relatively easy to make the baby. It's not a lot to that part. But then this is a lifetime commitment. You know, this is something that's going to be with you until one of you dies. Maybe it would do for people to review that fact before they're quite so cavalier about exchanging genetic material. Not an easy thing to require people to do, because obviously it feels very good. But anyway, I think that's probably the extent I'm going to take that line of thought. Just the idea of what is this urge to create a new life? Where does it come from? And perhaps an awareness of that, or at least just thinking about it, puts us in a better position to make decisions. I'm in, I guess, the enviable position of never having paid consequences for a poor decision in that area. Never had an unintended pregnancy that I know of impact my life. So, you know, I got away with it. I'll probably get away with it the next time, too. Until I don't. And then just hope it can't be, you know, when I'm 60. And that would just be, it's just not fair. It's not fair to give a child a 60-year-old father. Okay, well, we're running out of time. So I do want to thank you for joining me this evening. There will be a show next week. As you're digesting, it's not on Thanksgiving. Friday is the day after Thanksgiving. You've got 24 hours, more than 24 hours to recover. So I expect you all here. Just because it's the day after Thanksgiving, that's pretty lame. You can come and visit with me once more. Up here, and I'll try to have something more interesting to talk about than my sexual history with my past girlfriends. Okay. Once again, thanks for joining me, and I will see you next week. Good night.